getting together and having the ability to meet with folks and to talk about a subject that honestly I myself am even scared to talk about. It's one of those areas that it's known, but it's also very hard to, I mean, just really hard to talk about, but it should be.
Yeah. It almost feels taboo, you know,
in
a way. I was
going to use that word. Yeah, taboo. But it's so big, James. I mean, I just did a little looking, and in the 20 years from 2000 to 2020, I think over 800,000 people in the United States took their life. The height, as far as the biggest year, was 2022, with nearly 50,000 people whose death was by suicide. And it's just staggering. And then a little bit more research into our industry, where, yeah, you know, construction and mining is one of the biggest, largest industries that is affected. And I tell you, it's, you know, and again, James, I got to tell you know, myself being sober for 13 years, I used to not talk about alcoholism. I used to not go to that place, and I avoided it. And then I got over that hump, and now, you know, everybody knows I herald and shout it from the mountaintops. And I think what we need to do is really take a look at ourselves and open up ourselves and talk about this when we feel right, not necessarily haphazardly, but in a way that, you know, feels comfortable to us, and really look out for our friends. I mean, that's an unfortunate part. That, yeah, you know, it's all around us.
For a little bit of context, we are recording today, really ahead of schedule, but for release during September, which is Suicide Prevention Month. And, you know, 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago coming up, if you would have told me this is what we were going to be doing with the show, I think we probably all would have laughed and said you're crazy. But such an important topic. So yeah, thankful for our friends over at Miller and Arterra companies as a whole, DDS, yeah, being involved and bringing it to our attention. Laura, our good friend who's been on the show, rock star, says, hey, I've got an idea. We perk up and listen, right? And so the idea was this. And she facilitated some conversation within Arterra about really an initiative and a group that they've put together to go to work to really work on mental health in general, but also specifically this is one that hits home with them, suicide prevention. They're a large organization, and so, you know, you got a lot of people. People are impacted. You just said the numbers. It's hard not to avoid it. I know personally, I have family who's been deeply impacted.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of feeds on itself when it gets in a family. You see it happen again and again.
Sure.
You've seen it on both sides of my family. So when I heard it, I wanted to be involved. You were immediately, you know, on board with it. It was just a matter of making it happen. So when we were able to sit down with Eileen and Jim Fox, Eileen Atkinson from Miller Pipeline, who we know, we've known for a long time.
Yep.
We saw their names on there, and we heard their stories. I remember we got an email early in the week before we recorded, and I think both of us probably cried in our hands.
We did. I did.
In preparation. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, their stories meant something. And so we realized, man, you know, we need to think about this one a little bit differently. And so we slowed down, took a little bit of time, and thought, you know, this needs a little bit of context before people jump into this. Eileen has shared her story and her brother's story throughout the years on LinkedIn and other platforms.
Yep.
So Jim and I actually knew, you know, the story to some degree, but to hear her and to experience that yesterday when we recorded, man, I needed a minute yesterday after it was all done, after both of them, you know, but it means something to hear those stories firsthand and to get to be the one to bring those stories to everybody. So, you know, in a month where it's about awareness, it's always about awareness, you know, 988, whatever you want to say, pick up the phone, reach out to somebody, we feel very blessed to be able to bring these stories to our industry.
Yep, and I'll just add in a little bit. When I did a little bit of research just to enlighten myself, the 988 is something you can call or text. And they say on there that if it's not even for yourself, but if you see signs, and that's the other thing I'd like to say, is that by going on the web, you look for signs where people, from little things like giving possessions away, that they're like, oh, I don't need it anymore. And you're like, this is a prized possession you've had for years, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of different signs on there. And they encourage the 988, if you see something, ready for this, see something, say something. If something doesn't seem right, call the 988 to get yourself, get some advice from a professional there. Don't wait. It's better to talk to somebody.
So we're going to dive right in. We're going to start with Eileen's story. She joined us and she was so nervous to share her story, but also so brave. There was no doubt she was going to do it. She just, she needed a little bit of time to ramp up. But man, once she started, there was no doubt why she was there. Let's jump on and join Eileen right in the conversation.
First, thank you both for taking the time to talk about this topic. As you mentioned, September is Suicide Prevention Month, as well as Suicide Prevention Week for the construction industry, which is what we do every day. So I never thought I would be in this position or affected by suicide. It's not something I hope that anybody's affected by, but that's inevitable, unfortunately. But it's really important to me because it hits home. I'm one of nine kids. There's eight girls and one boy. And my brother, James, he was 21. And in 2020, he took his life, September 24th, 2020. And he was also in the construction industry. And I remember that day, that night, that I got the call. And it's a trigger for me. But I remember I had just went to bed and I keep my phone on vibrate. And I turned over and I heard my phone vibrating. And I remember thinking, like, who's texting, who's calling me? And then it was my mom. And she told my sister and I to get to her house right away. And I was, before I could even respond to her, she's sending message after message after message to get home. So I jumped out of bed and I thought it was my dad or my grandpa. Never think it would be my brother or any of my siblings. And I pulled up to my mom's house, or my sister's house. They lived right by each other, and she was in the driveway. I knew it wasn't good. I walked in the house. My one sister was already crying, and my mom told us there was an accident. My brother took his life, so I don't really remember. I try not to remember everything right then. I just know that the next day I was on an airplane to California, and with my sisters, and I spent 2 weeks out there. My brother he worked out of town, so he was out of town as well. That took a lot of logistics. Funeral, it was 2020. We started planning his funeral, and they told us, I think, 20 people. And I explained to the woman that he has eight sisters and two parents, so that's 10 people right there. Like, we need a little bit of leeway. My brothers come to shut the entire company down for the day, and I am not kidding. We were only told 20 people, about 250 people were there. And they all had their trucks, they all had their lights on, and they lined them up, and it was beautiful. Again, they showed up for my brother, they showed up as a company. For my brother, just for us. Losing somebody by suicide is a tragedy, and it's something that you don't have answers to. And I feel like, death is inevitable. It's going to happen. But when it's by suicide, I think it hits a lot different. There's voids that can never be filled. You beat yourself up wondering why. You have no explanation why. Like my sisters and I, like I said, there's eight girls, one boy. It's like, could How didn't we notice any signs? His girlfriend, you know, what could we have done as a family to help him? And we still don't know. To this day, we don't know why. Really want to continue to bring awareness. I want people to know they're not alone. Especially in the industry, I know we're in a male-dominated field, and I know men have a lot of pride. They're really stubborn. And, you know, there's always that they have to be a man. They can't show signs of weakness. And that's just one stigma I want to break, that that doesn't make you weak. It makes you new. And that goes for men and women. Yeah, after my brother passed, I knew I wasn't okay, and my sisters weren't okay. And I knew I wanted to do more, because this, like I mentioned, I don't want one person to ever have the experience or feeling that my family and I had. So I got into therapy right away, trying to deal with grief. I didn't know how to really deal with this type of grief. And I was trying to understand the why, because I don't know why, and I still don't know why, and I still constantly ask myself that all the time. Therapy went really well. I also did it through the employee assistance program that's offered through work, which I'm huge on that too. I really, really try to tell people it's so beneficial, because sometimes therapy can get expensive. Your insurance doesn't cover it, but there's programs through your work. So I did that. My therapist was amazing. She gave me tools, resources. After my therapy session, I recorded a video and I shared that with my sisters, because some of them weren't comfortable going to therapy or didn't want, but I still feel like I had to share what I learned in therapy with my sisters to help them heal, and just different coping mechanisms. I know if I could talk about it, impact it has, and if somebody, if I strike that chord with that one person, then I know I'm making a difference, even if it's not with somebody that's thinking about it, but somebody that is also struggling because they lost a loved one, they don't know what to do, they don't know what direction to go as far as healing and resources. I want to be that person. That's why I, you know, you guys know I share my story often on LinkedIn. I share it on all my social platforms. All it takes is one person to come across or one person to reshare it. My sisters and I are part of the AFSP, which is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. That was something I found locally in Indiana. And then I realized their nationwide chapter. We participate in their walks. I try to do a few a year with my sisters and my brother-in-laws and nieces and nephews. And I cannot tell you. I've done like breast cancer walks and many other walks. This walk was like the most moving thing I've ever been a part of. Something just felt different being there, and maybe because I was directly impacted, but yeah, it was very moving. So we walk, we raise money every year. Unfortunately, since then, I've lost a few other people to suicide close to me, and sometimes you don't understand why. You know, I was a resource, and why didn't they reach out to me when they know my story? And but you know, one thing I learned in therapy was that when that person is in such a dark place, it is so hard for them to get out, and they don't feel like they can get out. And I personally never experienced that feeling, so I can't say, well, yeah, they can. They could just, you know, it's not that easy. And that's one thing that I learned, is that's not me. I've never been there. So I can't, it's easy to not be like, and I want other people to know that too, because some people don't take mental health serious. And it's not just suicide. It's substance abuse, stress, anxiety, depression. Like, those are all hard things to get yourself out of. And I can't imagine being in that such dark of a place. Laura reached out to me more recently this year, and she knows that is something I'm very, very, very passionate about. So when she called me and asked if I would be on the committee that Arteria is doing with all the operating companies, I didn't hesitate twice, when she knew I wouldn't.
Sure.
So I knew the right person. We started that committee. I think that's the best thing that Miller Pipeline and Arteria could do, truly. Especially just being so passionate about it, that is the best thing that they could be doing for their employees. So it's a mental health task force. Like I said, we're not focusing just on suicide. We're focusing on everything across the board, because everybody has their own struggles. Even if it's, you know, somebody at home that, you know, they come to work fine, but then they go home and have to deal with those types of things. And so we developed this committee. We got, I believe, 10 members from different operating companies across the Arteria footprint. And We meet bi-weekly and we're just trying to figure out ways, different campaigns. We're really trying to dive in deeper to see how we can help our employees and bring awareness to those that are struggling.
Eileen, we appreciate your story. I know a lot of folks that are out there doing this type of work, and what I mean is spreading awareness and having these hard conversations. You were so nervous today to get on here and talk to us, but at the same time, you did it. Is there anything you would say to folks just personally out there? Obviously, they can call 988. Is there anywhere else you can think of?
Thank you. I do want people to know to call 988. Something I don't think a lot of people are aware of is it's not just for those that are struggling, but those that, like, if you know somebody is struggling and you want to help them, you should call them and talk to somebody and get guidance on how to, maybe if somebody comes to you and says, hey, like, I'm struggling, I'm thinking about doing X, Y, and Z, then you could call 982 and talk to somebody, and they could give you and guide you ways to talk to that individual. Or like myself, if I'm struggling because I lost a loved one, I could also call 988. And I don't think people realize that. I really like to spread the word about that. The AFSP, if you just type in afsp.org, they have a ton of resources. They have social media pages. And then really the one I think that is the most important is the employee assistance programs that companies offer. I don't know what I would have done without the therapy. I think that was a huge part of my healing process. And to be able to have that at my fingertips, that's just part of my benefits, I think is huge. And that's something employees need to know. It's free. It's there. It's for you to use.
Can I just jump in? And you were very inspiring to me today. And you taught me two things, Eileen. One, we're old friends. And even though we're very good friends, I still was very cautious about ever saying anything to you about all you went through, because again, you said that stigma, and I was like, okay, it's better just to keep that up. And in our industry, one of the highest impacted by death by suicide, I mean, it's real. And then what you mentioned about EAP is so important. Knowing that I've been sober 13 years, it took me 12 years to finally use EAP. And so I just want to foot stomp that absolutely, and better late than never, I will say to anybody, it's never too late.
Thank you, ma'am, for sharing your story with us and so many others.
One of the hardest, most emotional episodes I have ever done, James, was sitting down with Eileen.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I wasn't kidding. After we wrapped up with Eileen, we were done for the day, and it was one of those where you just kind of locked up and went, walked around for a minute, you know.
Yeah.
Very real.
I took about 45 minutes, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So brave of Eileen to sit down with us again.
Tremendous.
If you could have seen the nerves in her when we started, and then to hear her, you know, break through all that. She only broke down once or twice, and that's pretty impressive. I think we only kept it together one or two times.
Yeah,
then
I did.
Earlier, before Eileen, we actually sat down with Jim Fox, and we saved him. Kind of as the middle of the story, because when we heard his story, you know, by proxy through Laura and others, we knew it was going to be, you know, one that needed to be told. And so when he sat down, he's in the work truck, you know, you could tell that he was stepping away from his real job, his real day, to be able to help others. And he's a safety guy, right? So
yes,
I think he even said it in the interview, this is a different type of safety we're dealing with, you know, psychological safety.
Tremendous point. Now, that's something we cannot gloss over. We need to lean into that as an industry.
Absolutely.
Talk about physical safety every minute of every day, but the psychological safety, the mental safety, we need to lean into that as an industry. Absolutely. His point was unbelievable. I will say that he and I, we bonded when I learned about his story. He had alcoholism and substance abuse, and then started a group, you know, after getting sober in his church. Likewise, myself being now sober 13 years, I volunteer at my local church, which we have an organization called Recovery Church. Very different, similar, but different organizations. He and I just absolutely There's a little bit of a bond when you have that same type of experience between two people, but his went a lot farther than mine did. And to hear his story is emotional would be an understatement.
Let's join right in at the conversation with Jim Fox from DDS.
It's very important to me, suicide prevention and awareness in construction. I work for a construction company underneath Arterra. Umbrella DDS companies in Rochester, New York, and the suicide rate in construction just continues to go up. It's important for me personally. I'm a suicide attempt survivor myself, and substance abuse recovery myself as well. And I think it's important that people see that everybody can suffer. Everybody can have that moment where they think the only way out is suicide. I myself had that moment. I had substance abuse problems, infidelity issues with my wife. And, I lost my wife, lost my kids to substance abuse, and I put a gun in my mouth, and that gun didn't go off. By the grace of God, that gun did not go off, and you have that instant regret immediately, and that instant regret of, man, everybody that does care about me, that I felt alone. I felt alone. I felt like nobody cared. I felt like I was a burden on everybody. And then after it all happened, I didn't realize how many people loved me, how many people were there to support me. It was me inside my own head telling myself this stuff. And that instant regret of, nobody's going to understand that I didn't want to die when I pulled that trigger and it doesn't go off. I was blessed. The Lord saved me that day. I was sitting in my truck crying out to the Lord, and I didn't know God at that point. I was always told if you killed yourself, you went to hell. And I was praying to God, please don't make me go to hell. I want to be with my dad. I want to be with you. And this is somebody that, if you would have talked to me 15 minutes before I was in my truck with that gun in my mouth, I would have said I hated God. I hated everything he did with me. And the Lord saved me that night. And I didn't even know it at that point. The police department came and they mental hygiene arrested me. And I went into an inpatient program. Like I said, I had lost my wife and my kids. They didn't lose them to death. They left for their own mental stability. I was a train wreck. And I got out of that without a scratch. So I came out, and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, they're very big in the church, and I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear anything about God. I said, nope, this is crazy. You guys are nuts. They said, well, how do you think that gun didn't go off? How do you think you got saved? They said, yeah, you guys are nuts. So I went back to the apartment that my wife and kids and I lived in and walked in, and it was empty. Completely empty. Kind of tore up a little bit because my wife was moving things out as fast as she could without really affecting the kids. Walked up to our bedroom, and her Bible that she got when we got married was sitting on our bed. At that point, I realized I needed something. And next day was Sunday. I went to church, and it's all been crazy since then. My wife and I got back together. We run a ministry for our church called Renewed Hope Recovery. We do recovery through the 12 steps, but with the Bible, with God's word. I try to tell my testimony to anybody that wants to hear it, because if it helps one person, that's all that matters. If it helps one person and they ask for help or reach out, that's my entire testimony is worth it.
That's, as you could tell, it choked me up a little bit. Choked me up yesterday reading your story too, Jim. And we have something very similar. As I said, I've been sober 13 years. I also volunteer at a recovery church, which is a 12-step AA program that is faith-based, Jesus-based. And I also didn't realize for a while until after I was sober that Jesus saved my life too.
Yes.
So, as you're on this journey now, which is phenomenal. And James knows my words. If we could affect one person positively, then we've done our job.
Amen.
And James, and we say that all the time. Amen is right. You know, and I don't go to a conference without at least, unfortunately, one person coming up to me and asking me, hey, was it hard? You know, and that usually indicates they or somebody they know might have an issue too. With sure. But personally, I could share my story a lot, and we'll do that later. I want to hear yours, like a call to action. And, you know, what do you say to folks, or what's your next step for awareness or prevention in this topic of suicide prevention?
If I can be fixed, anybody can be fixed. So my biggest thing to people is let it out. You got to talk about it. You're going to end up in the same spot I was. If nobody knows what's going on, they can't help you. And if you don't be honest with yourself about what's going on, you can't help yourself. There's lots of help out there. Tons of help. You got 988. Your employers have employee health assistance programs. Counties have help. Churches have help. You know, I'm always available for anybody that needs help. And I let everybody know that, you know, there is somebody out there that cares about you, that is going to miss you, that's going to question why you did it, what they could have done differently. The way you're feeling now is a temporary feeling with a permanent solution that is going to leave those same feelings on everybody you leave behind. I talked to my wife about the night that I attempted to kill myself. At that point, she was gone. She didn't want anything to do with me, didn't want me around the kids. And to me, it was, she hates me. No, she loved me unconditionally while I was going through everything. She got to a point where she needed to leave for her own safety and for the mental health of our children. And she and I have talked, and she shared her side of our testimony, because our testimony is our testimony together. The regret she felt about me wanting to attempt to kill myself was unbearable for her. And you don't think about that in the moment. You just want to end that temporary problem with a permanent solution. So just talk, get it out there, because there is somebody out there that cares about everybody.
Yeah. And just in case you didn't hear it, reach out to either of us, any of us here on the show today. DM, text us, send a message, reach out. Someone's listening. Excellent. For sure. You mentioned it earlier about, you know, the numbers. It's scary right now in construction, just how many folks. It's a pandemic within itself, right?
Yes.
So I guess what kind of drove this initial discussion and getting us together was our industry and the things that Artera is doing, you know, within y'all's companies. I know y'all put some intentionality, some effort around bringing this to light and making sure your people are taken care of. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I started DDS through Artera 2 years ago, almost 2 years now, and working for a company that cares so much about their employees. Sorry, it's choking me up. It's
right.
Incredible.
Yeah.
When everything happened with my suicide attempt, I worked in public safety, and I've been a fireman for over 20 years. The care I get out of Artera, how much, from the CEO to the mechanic, everybody cares. It's awesome. And I hope that we're paving the way for other construction companies to do this, because it's not just our numbers. It's an industry number. And I'm hoping that other companies will see that it's time to step up and say, this is not okay. We need to preach help that we want to get people. I work in safety. I'm a safety coordinator. We're always constantly talking about safety, 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 safety. Is the hole safe? Are you slip, trips, and falls? How often on a job briefing do you say, how's your mental health? Are you safe inside?
Yeah,
great
point.
Because you can be safe outside. The second you're unsafe inside, the outside stuff just spirals. So we got to make sure our people are safe on the inside.
Yeah, it sounds like great psychological point. Safety, right? That sounds like a new topic, but it's always been there. We just haven't asked the question.
Right. And you can't force people to talk about it, but you can give them the avenues to go when they need it. You know, it's hard to talk about it. There's no doubt about it. I spent years not talking about it and holding it in. But,
yep.
You know, once you know you have the avenues to go and you work for a company that cares so much about their people, it's awesome.
That's awesome. Great. Well, Mr. Fox, we appreciate the work you do, not only keeping our gas systems running out there in this world and other things, but also just for your story, your testimony, and all the work you're putting into this. I know our territory appreciates it, but our industry appreciates it as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Hey, stay safe.
I think it says a lot to me when Jim Fox said, you know, that Artera isn't like, or DDS isn't like other companies. You know, the way they've treated him and worked with him and allowed him to continue to share his story and be who he was, you could tell how much that meant to him. You know, well, someone who doesn't take things very lightly, as well he shouldn't in life, you could tell that was very clear. Man, both stories just absolutely floored us. We hope that they've reached someone out there who's struggling. There's, you know, there's got to be folks in our industry, specifically the natural gas, but also construction as a whole,
yeah,
utilities as a whole.
Yep.
All the folks and all of our listeners, you know, there's companies out there that are working on this, but not all companies are. And that's the truth. And so as many eyes as we can put this in front of, the better. But Artera is, and that's amazing news. And the folks over there, you know, they've got a big group, and so they can touch, you know, the lives of many people that work for them. And so we've been blessed to be able to be good friends with somebody over there, Dustin Dyer.
Yeah.
We just saw him not too long ago in Atlanta at the headquarters, and he was talking about this very thing. And again, to see his name on the list when we were going to record, this stuff was hitting home with people. And yeah, it was neat to hear his perspective, Jim. And we're going to jump in there, see, you know, why. What's the why behind what Artera is doing as a company, you know, in terms of mental health and specifically this month with suicide prevention. So let's jump in there, Jimmy, and let's anxious for everybody to kind of hear, you know, how Artera is handling this, because I think it's very important.
Absolutely.
So since I was joined the workforce, I've been doing construction, and it's always been talked about that this number of mental health type issues in construction is 3-4 times greater than the average. And so it's a problem that's got to be addressed. And then I had an experience just working in other places, and some are ahead of us in the U.S. on this topic. And I don't understand that necessarily, but we should catch up. Whatever we can do to catch up, we should try. And the other thing too about just being a corporate HSE type leader guy, everybody does something around mental health, but typically it's seasonal. And that's great. We should continue to do that. Every time you get to Christmas, some folks have family, some don't. And that's important to remember. But at the same time, this is almost continuous, perpetual, doesn't stop, you know. And so we got these exaggerated numbers in construction where we obviously struggle with this. It's such an interesting topic, too, because it's not just suicide. That's a big part of it. It's also substance abuse related. It's a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And then I think we've talked about before, but I'll say again, is that you got X number of workers that may struggle with mental health things from time to time, to whatever extent, some greater than others, but with varying degrees of coping ability. But if you also think about construction and travel and transient and going to project, these folks, these men and women that are in our business are carrying around 3 or 4 dependents, probably on average, maybe 3, 2, 3. And they have mental health issues, statistically speaking, as well. And that's coming into the work. So it's not just the employee that's dealing with what he's dealing with or she's dealing with, but the folks at home that they're away from while they're putting this pipe in the ground, you know. So it just comes in so many different facets of the business that it's worth addressing, you know. So personally for me, though, to your question, James, you said, why is it important to me? Well, just in my family, there's been substance abuse issues to one degree or another, different family members. So I've kind of always been around that. to some extent. And so that kind of, this new thing around this fentanyl stuff, 15 years ago, this synthetic opiate stuff was a problem. There was no fentanyl. Now, this is a whole nother ballgame with this fentanyl stuff that's coming in across the borders. And it kills, you know, it kills instantly because there's no measure to it. There's no scientific anything to it. And it's so cheap, it's going to be the problem we face going forward for keeping the workforce safe.
Yeah, and I'll tell you just, I don't know if we talked about this before, but I have lost a personal friend of mine to fentanyl that happened last year, addicted somewhat to it. And then one tablet was just a, as the industry says, a hot batch, and he died. And then that was it. There was no
50 in that. 50 times more addictive than morphine, 100 times more addictive than heroin, if you can even wrap your brain around that.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, I'm kind of in this community, recovery community, to some extent, more than others probably. And it's not just the people you drop by on the side of the road and you say, oh, somewhere along the way, we made a bad life decision. Now, these are college athletes who got injured and took what they thought was a muscle relaxer and didn't wake up. These are students that are studying for a test. They think they're taking an Adderall. They die. These are first-time user type deaths. In our high schools, you know, it's rampant. So,
Dustin, you mentioned the numbers being higher in construction, and we all know that it's a male-dominated field, at least currently, that there's definitely more and more women every day. But, you know, coming with that, I'm male myself, there's a stigma, you know, that we've got to work through too, a stigma when it comes to mental health. And
I think it's a tough nut to crack, so to speak. But for us, just from a leadership perspective, I'm trying to think of where I can influence. And, you know, we train on a lot of things. So we soft skills, workforce skills, and development stuff specific to our trade. But we don't do a lot of training around mental health awareness. And so, but our supervisors are left to deal with it. And so I think step one for me specifically was getting executive support buy-in, which we did early on at Arterra. I grew up watching my grandfather work. So we all have a mentor that we aspire to follow or work like. And so that's important. These folks look up to their supervision. They really do. And so for them to be properly equipped and trained to handle it is a big thing. Now, I don't need my supervisors to be mental health professionals or recovery specialists, but they should have that awareness to know, yeah, look, something's going on. Let's just not tell him go home for the day and come back tomorrow because he might not make it till tomorrow. So we're focused on getting supervisors great training around this particular topic relative to their role in it, which is managing people. And so we're focused on that. We found some good resources there.
Has that taken down, do you think, the stigma? And I think we have talked about this offline. I mean, even in my lifetime, I remember 20-plus years ago where somebody told me, oh, you're having a bad day, you're depressed. Take the day off, go have a couple of drinks, you'll feel better, then come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was honestly said to me as, you know, something that I should do. I look at it now and I just shake my head. I'm like, I cannot believe that even 20 years ago that was being said.
Yeah. I won't share anything real personal, but we had a workforce event not long ago where all of that scenario existed. But instead, the supervisor recognized it and kept that worker at the work site and productive throughout that day, not doing his normal job. Thing else, and we kept him in close proximity to others. And we did not know it at the time, but the employee circled back around to say that that made a significant difference in what happened.
So, Dustin, I know Arterra is putting some effort into this more so than maybe other companies out there. What are you guys doing over there that's a little different?
Well, I think everybody's got the traditional HR ERP program. I think the key is there's so much going on in construction business, from finances to closing the books to project execution, to all these things we got to do, logistics of people and equipment. And it's easy to get focused on the traditional metrics, like safety metrics, which I'm involved in all the time. To carve out time to talk about mental health specifically, I don't think happens accidentally. So you got to be very intentional about it. So for me, it was getting with our CEO, Joel, and really making a plan to get our leadership team to talk about mental health, which everybody was very supportive. I don't know that that would have occurred naturally without kind of pushing the issue a little bit. But once we were all aligned, that made a ton of difference. And so how do you do that other than just meetings, getting them on camera, that we do so much more with video today, getting them to open up, tell a story about it, relate to it, let folks know it's okay to talk about, or even that that a leader has issues to think, oh, they got it all together, I want to be like that person. And they have days too. Yeah. So that was step one. The other thing too, James, I think this is for anybody. Construction Research Line, you know, out of Boulder, Colorado over there, they have a program through another organization. I think it's called Vital Cog, which does a great supervisor train the trainer type course. Absolutely. It was a great course for us to find, and we're starting to get folks through it. So I think that'll help.
Dustin, let me lean in a little bit more on the personal side, because you hit something just recently in your talk that kind of sparked something with me. In my heyday, when I was on a right of way or whatever, like in the morning, I would look at people's eyes. I would look at their hands to see if things were shaking. Again, more so associated with alcohol. And I would have and I apologize to everybody I've ever done this to. Oh, go have some coffee. Well, all you have is a wide awake drunk. You know, you don't have a sober person. And you've really enlightened myself, as well as others have, to the crisis more on the opioids and the fentanyl right now. And thinking about that, as for somebody like me, what should I do? What should I look for? What safety things should we be having in the workplace to, like, somebody were to overdose on a job site?
There's an opioid reversal medicine. So just down from me, I'm in Atlanta. There's a public high school not far from me on the other side of Atlanta, where a couple months ago, there was a student that overdosed and passed away at this particular high school, a 15-year-old female. Well, they did not have this. As I understand it, they did not have this reversal medication. And so today, the school systems have resource officers and different things. But my point of the whole conversation as it relates to the workforce is, where you used to have a first aid kit, a fire extinguisher, an AED, now you need three things plus Narcan. It should be in the workforce. It should be around the first aid kits. But I'm telling you, it is critical to saving lives related to this fentanyl crisis. And for us not to have it, it's just like not having an AED.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate what you guys are doing. If there's anybody out there struggling, anybody out there that wants to talk, anything, I know my inbox is open. If you got my number, if you need my number, reach out. I'm always open. Jim's been very open. I know you've mentioned it before, but any call to action for folks out there that might be struggling a bit?
Yeah, I just think that they'd be surprised how well their supervision could relate to it if they brought it up. And then always you can find a good HSE professional that, you know, we wear all those hats, a counselor, marriage counselor, safety professional, all those things. And so I guarantee you an HSE person, a safety person, an HR professional, there's somebody in your workforce you could talk to about it other than struggle with it on your own. And I think you would be really surprised as to how that conversation went and the support you got. And so, yeah.
Spoken by a true professional. Thank you, Dustin, for all y'all are doing.
Yep,
appreciate
absolutely.
You.
Thanks
yep.
for the platform to talk about it, for sure.
Yep. It's our honor.
You got to have a why, Jimmy, you know? I mean,
yep.
It's clear as day why they're doing what they are. And you can see it in their people. You can see it's not just lip service. You can see it in the actions by what they're doing. The testimonies we heard in this episode, there's no question why this is such an important topic.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And again, so many kudos. My strong respect, my heart, everything to Eileen, Jim, and Dustin for joining us and being so brave and to tell the stories and to tell things that are hard to hear, but we need to hear it. And if they can be this brave, we can be this brave. And what we need to do is be good people and stewards and neighbors and friends and family and everything, and look out for folks and look for the signs. And by any thoughts of any concerns, call or text 988. Anybody and everybody should have that number, 988. And just talk to a professional, just say, either I'm feeling this way or I'm seeing my friend or my family member feel this way, and I'm concerned.
If you got my number, it's always open. Friend or foe, it doesn't matter. If you're feeling some type of way, please reach out. Not just this month either. You know, share this month twice, but you know, this is the message we want to get out all the time.
Yep. Reach us 365.
Yeah. Hey, we appreciate those messages, the work going on over at Artera as well.
Oh, yeah.
Great partners, as always.
Yes.
But please share this message. Let's get it out. See how many people we can impact.
Absolutely.
Till next
time. Stay safe, everyone.